Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Click of Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. Okay, the numbers we're going to talk about in this episode are the top 300 trades for February 2009 as sold from Diamond to retailers for the month. With me, as always, for this is good friend Chris Marshall from the Collected Comics Library. How you doing tonight, Chris?
I'm good, John. Thanks for having me on again.
Hey, always good to have you. Now, we always talk about the top now 300, used to be 100 trades, as sold through Diamond to retailers. I want to start the discussion this month by kind of taking a step back and talking about that definition of this data set real quick. Literally, what this is what Diamond is reporting as the top 300 items that they have sold, and that means shipped and invoiced to retailers for the month. Now, why is that really important this month? Well, the month we're talking about is February 2009. On February 5th, Diamond started moving out of their warehouses and storage facilities in Memphis into the new Olive Branch facility about 20 miles away in Missouri. This was a huge undertaking. It involved physical move of two warehouses and merging in a storage facility to one physical location, like 20 million items across at least, I think, 20,000 products, you know, with, a particular trade being one product, etc. Mm-hmm. A new warehouse management system, plus just the minutia of people now having somewhere different to be working, because like 90-95% of their workforce, you know, made that transition. And their plan had been, starting the 5th, they suspend all reorders for trade paperbacks and graphic novels. They move everything. 2 weeks later, whatever, on, I think it was the 16th of February, they'd start taking reorders again. That stuff would hit stores in time for New Comic Book Day, Wednesday the 25th. That was the plan. Now, they prioritized the top 100 trades from 2008 and some other stuff to kind of, you know, minimize the impact this would have on retailers. But as you can imagine, with an undertaking of this scope, magnitude, and complexity, it didn't go as quickly as they'd hoped. As of the end of March, my understanding is there's still a couple of thousand product lines not available for reorder. That's the end of March, not the end of February. So there are a good couple of weeks there, which covers the lion's share of February, where reorders on trades just simply, you know, didn't really happen to any major degree. Obviously, new trades kept coming and going through the system. But given the scope of this thing, this could have easily been a very, very weak month for everybody on the trade side. Whereas it was not, you know, a brilliant month or whatever, but it was really not that bad, all things considered, you know, given that warehouse move. I think what we're going to see in March is, you know, a similar, you know, bit of impact to a lesser degree than we're seeing in February on the trades. But then come April, when, you know, and this is April 1st as we record, they've still got a few, you know, thousand or two items to get back on, you know, into the system for reorder and stuff, but the lion's share of it's back in there. We may see a bump in sales for April, just for retailers, you know, who were trying to get stuff and weren't able to in February and March. Now, I've been involved at a corporate information systems level of implementation of major systems. And again, they put in a new warehouse control system. That in and of itself, major undertaking. you know, and then again, you're talking about the moving of like 2 million physical items. You know, I don't know what led to that 2 week time frame that they were thinking or whatnot, or what happened that made it stretch out longer. But frankly, I'm not really surprised by either. And the fact that we had some pretty strong sales again, I think, you know, Diamond kind of made the best of a potentially bad situation. To me, this is a case of really long-term gains at the cost of short-term pain. There was never going to be a great time to make this kind of a move.
Mm-hmm.
January, February timeframe, probably one of the best months to do it in. So, you know, they were good about letting retailers know this was coming, letting them know far enough ahead that they could stock up on whatever they thought they might need reorders for the duration, etc. But, you know, it comes down to the numbers we're seeing are what Diamond was able to ship and invoice. And because of this move, that impacted their ability to ship and invoice stuff. So I just wanted to kind of, you know, start with that and remind people, you know, the definition of this data set. Because if you lose sight of that and don't understand the ramifications of it, you really can't get any meaningful stuff out of the data. Because you're not treating it for what it is. But I'm hopeful that with the new warehouse management system, with, you know, them having consolidated multiple locations into one, you know, that all of this is really going to position Diamond well for the future, to where they can kind of reduce the cost of distributing an item, increase their efficiency, their productivity, and just really, you know, it could benefit the industry, you know, immensely in the long term.
When an item ships late, is that a Diamond issue or is that like a Marvel and DC issue?
It depends how and why it ships late.
Yeah.
I have heard horror stories of publishers shipping stuff to Diamond, and this is as much on the comic side really as trade, but for any item. They ship it to Diamond, and in some cases, it doesn't happen often, it can get lost in the system. And I've heard cases where it got lost for like 2 months or something. And the publisher's like, well, they've got it. It should ship any day now.
Hmm.
Clearly, that's not the publisher's fault.
Right.
Other cases where, you know, the publisher just doesn't have it done, they don't ship it to Diamond, well, of course it's the publisher's fault. So it's hard to tell, and it varies on a case-to-case basis as to, you know, why something is shipping late.
You know, I've always wondered why, when you look at previews or the solicitations when they come out online, like Marvel and DC will say, you know, Captain America will ship on April 1st. You know,
mm-hmm.
You know, like 3 months out.
Well, they can do some of that because, particularly with Marvel and DC, they've got a big enough, you know, volume of items they're printing through Quebecor that they can kind of, you know, reserve press time, you know, and I imagine that's got to cause them a little bit of pain when they have stuff shipping late, like happened with Marvel at the point of Civil War #4. But by and large, they know they've got a window, they can print X amount, they can get it out at this point through Quebecor, that gets it to Diamond at this point, that gets it to the retailers at this point, and they've got it all mapped out.
Well, I guess also what I mean by that is, just getting back to my point, is, you know, they try to hit this target date 3 months out, and sometimes they hit it, and a lot of times they don't. You know, I'm talking like Marvel and DC, whereas the other publishers, like, you know, Top Shelf or an Avatar Press or, you know, the smaller independents, when they do their solicitations, it's only coming out like in April. They never have a definite target date. And like, well, maybe at first I was annoyed by that, but now that makes a lot more sense. Now, you know, they say it's shipping in April. It'll eventually, they don't have to hit like April 1st or April 8th or something like that.
But that
they can hit the target date in April.
Well, hopefully, yes. I mean, there are cases where they'll say April and it comes out in May, June, July, August, September, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Sometimes not even the same year. But they usually only specify the month because the printers they're using, be it Quebecor or somebody else, isn't able to really lock down. You will print at this time. We can guarantee this ship date.
Right.
So that gives them a little bit of a fudge factor. You know, and in some cases, some of these companies are using printers over in China and stuff. They can get much better rates, but it just takes longer to get here, and maybe it takes longer to get through customs or whatever the process, you know, involved is.
Right. Well, that's why I think then you see a lot of the higher end books, like the Absolutes, are like 6 months out because they have to put them all together and have them bound in China.
Yeah.
And literally on a slow boat back to the States.
Well, the longer your production cycle is, and this comes up with like the DC Direct Action figures and things of that nature, it takes long enough from when you say we're going to make X amount to them getting to the store that you want to solicit it with a long enough cycle to know what that X amount is. You know, and you may need to know that back in February, even if the item's not going to ship till August. You know, and that's why on those items, you'll see a targeted ship date that's, you know, 6-9 months out.
Right.
Frustrating part is sometimes they miss that too. To me, the issue on the lateness thing is kind of coming down to solicitations have gotten to where they're suggestions. They're not like contractual or something. They'll change what's in the book. They'll change the length of the book. They'll change the price of the book. They'll change the creators on the book. Sometimes, you know, the complete contents will change, or they'll just say, "Ah, we're not going to tell you."
Or they'll change the price, and that'll really piss you off.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, it seems like they have carte blanche to do whatever they want, which, yeah, they do. It's their book. But, you know, I kind of look at the solicitation kind of like as an oral contract. Yeah, it's not binding until it's written. But, you know, this is what we can expect. You know, this trade is going to come out. It's going to be $16.99, and this is what it's going to have. This is the page count. And, you know, I don't even care about the cover. It's more like the contents. And when they change it, when you go to the Diamond, you know, page where they have the shipping updates and the product changes, you know, it's funny. You know, you look at a Newsarama or a Comic Book Resources, and, you know, and I know you write for them, John, so I don't want to pick on them too much, but, you know, everybody is all over the solicitations, but they're not over the product changes and the price changes, and that's what irks me. That's kind of where my website comes in, at least on the trade side of things, and I kind of call them out on that.
I tell you, if I had a clean electronic feed of the solicitation data and the title changes, price changes, etc., I'd be happy to put that up on my website for all the items, and probably even put together an email thing of, hey, say you want to know if something changes on this.
Yeah.
Because I agree, it's, you know, it's hard to know what's changing and why.
Mm-hmm. Well, every week, I mean, Diamond has two pages on their website, one for shipping and one for product changes, and it's updated every week. It's not a week does not go by where there is not a change.
I mean,
it's something. I mean, it can be as small as Tokyo Pop. It can be as big as the Wolverine Omnibus. Changes, you know. It's amazing.
To me, the solicitations conceptually, to me, are contractual. And I'm willing to give a little bit of fudge.
No, I am too.
You know, hey, it ships a week or two late. Who cares? You know, just let us know.
Right.
Hey, you know, somebody got sick, you got to replace the artist. Hey, that's fine.
Right.
Oops, the writer's behind, we're going to swap somebody else out. That's fine. Just let us know. You want to change the name? That's a little annoying, but okay. You know, I'm willing to give some fudge. But these should be the exceptions, not the rule.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be hard-pressed to name any aspect of a comic, the title, the price, the, you know, whatever, the creators, the contents, that isn't open to change the last minute.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, this is where organizations like Comics Pro are very valuable.
Mm-hmm.
It allows the retailers to have a vehicle for communicating amongst themselves and to the publishers and Diamond and stuff as a conglomerate, and basically say, you know, this is kind of bugging all of us. Can you do something about it? Maybe they can, maybe they can't, whatever. But, you know, one of the points Brian Hibbs made a number of times is without that kind of an umbrella group, it's easy for a publisher or distributor to just say, hey, it's just you, and nobody else is having this problem. Why are you making such a big deal about it? Mm-hmm. But having this, it allows them to say, you know, hey, maybe you shouldn't classify these solicitations. Maybe you should tell us this thing's going to be, you know, 16 pages of new story for $4.99 or $3.99 or, you know, whatever the case may be. Or this thing's going to ship late or it's a misprint. We're going to reship it, you know, whatever. Because I think all of those things in aggregate over time are one of the contributing factors why sales drop over time. People just get burned out. It's like, well, you know, these companies, certainly they have a game plan in most cases. They know what they're doing. Everyone out there, I think, is trying to make the best product possible. But it's easy to get very jaded on the reader side, you know, on that other side of previews where you're wondering, well, this thing said it was going to come out 2 years ago. Is it ever coming out? So, you know, it's interesting because sometimes trying to match up what I see on the shipping list, what I see on the top sellers list with what was on the solicitation lists is surprisingly hard at times, you know, and that's frustrating for me. But, you know, I'm a data junkie.
Right.
So.
Well, speaking of the data, let's get on with it.
Okay. Yeah. With no further ado, because we've had enough ado already. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, let's take a look at the breakdown of the top 300 trades. Now, as really is no major surprise, DC came out at the top of the breakdown. They usually do this about 2 out of 3 months. You know, that other month usually almost always going to Marvel. This time they did it with 33.79% of the total units for the trades and 36.14% of the total dollars for the trades. They did that with 26 items, new items, 73 reorder items for a total of 99 items. DC accounted for about a third of the list almost. And, you know, this was another month where DC had, you know, Fables volumes, you know, 1 through 11 on the trades. They had all 10 trades for Why the Last Man. The volumes 1 through 7 for the Preacher trades, 1 through 7 for the Sandman trades. That adds up. And really, you know, this is a case where, again, on the reorder side, you know, kudos for Diamond giving the move to get all that through the system and stuff, and kudos to DC for, you know, really having such a strong backlist on the trade side. A lot of this is Vertigo, certainly not all of it, but, you know, good for them. Marvel came in with the second largest percentage of the top trades, with 25.46% of the units and 29.28% of the dollars. So we're in another month where we're getting a roughly three-way split, DC, Marvel, everyone else. Now, in this case, the biggest third of that pie is the everybody else. Now, part of that is this month, Viz had 11.2% of the units, but only 5.51% of the dollars with their items. They had 34 new items on the list, 2 reorders for a total of 36. So, a lot of stuff from Viz.
Their prices are just smaller. I mean, their max price is $12.99 and their average price is $8.98. So that makes sense that their percentage of dollars is going to be off compared to Dark Horse, which came in fourth, which I'll let you talk about now.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Did I mention the number of items for Marvel? I don't think I did.
Yeah, 59 total.
Yeah, 34 of which was new items, 25 for...
Yeah, you did.
Okay. Dark Horse had a total of 20 items, 8 were new, 12 were reorder. And they counted for 6.76% of the units and 7.6% of the dollars for the trades. And then really from there, we start dropping off considerably.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Image had about 4.5% of the units and about 3.13% of the dollars, but only had, you know, 14 items.
IDW having 14 new items, though. That's kind of a lot for 1 month from IDW. For the trade side, anyway.
Well, IDW, I think, is really one of the kind of publishers to be watching these days. You know, a lot of what they had on the list this time was Transformer stuff.
Right, and G.I. Joe, which the movies are coming up.
They've got G.I. Joe, but that didn't show up on the trade yet. That'll be another few months. But between the Transformers license, They've got some Star Trek stuff.
Star Trek. I was thinking of the movies coming up. Yeah. Yeah.
IDW's really positioned pretty well for the properties they've got.
Mm-hmm.
And they're inching up there, you know, on both the comic side and the trade sides. You know, one of the things I'm starting to play with in the spreadsheet I give you and Bob every month is I've added kind of a third section to the monthly breakdown where I take the comics totals, the trade totals, and I'm doing this only on dollars. Cause, I mean, you can't really equate one unit of a comic to one unit of an absolute or something. I mean, it'd just be ridiculous. But you can kind of compare on dollars, cause I mean, people are shelling out, you know, X dollars, and that's got some sort of equivalence value, literally. And what I did is I broke stuff down into, you know, the different tiers of publishers. And I wound up with kind of five groupings. I go with kind of a major league, minor league, farm team kind of a metaphor when I talk about publishers. Major league, certainly Marvel and DC, although in this case I really put Dark Horse and Image there at the moment, because they're premier publishers. I may wind up moving them down to the minor league.
I could see Image and Dark Horse up there.
To me, I can see them there. I'm not saying they're rock solid there is the only thing. Because I think a strong case could be made that they're really kind of the minor league. And for me, a minor league is, you know, again, they're not that juggernaut that a Marvel DC is. This is like Boom, Dynamite, IDW, Oni. Publishers in the past that would have been in this area would have been CrossGen, Valiant,
mm-hmm.
First, Eclipse, back in the day, those kinds of things.
The only thing on the farm team that I would maybe move up would be Devil's Due.
Devil's Due right now...
They're a funny company right now, John. You know,
if this had been a year ago, I certainly would have put them in minor league team. And this is, to me, is something I'm just working on. And this is just as I was going through it, just kind of, you know, off the cuff type stuff. This is, you know, my own designations and not locked in stone. Cause again, Devil's Due, when it had the G.I. Joe stuff, when it was really, you know, firing on all cylinders, to me that clearly would have been a minor league.
Well, right now, I think correct me if I'm wrong, Hackslash, is that it? What they got right now? I don't think they have anything else.
Hackslash, I think they're still doing Drafted in some capacity.
Okay.
And I saw another press release about a Barack Obama title, but honestly, I don't know if that was an April Fool's Day joke or not.
Yeah.
It's one that I could actually see going either way.
Yeah.
And one that if it's actually going to happen, I might check out because it just sounded so insane.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a Conan take on him.
Right.
But yeah, it's one of those things that some of these publishers are, you know, this changes over time. Some stuff's going to move up and down. Mm-hmm. Now, I added two other categories to this composite breakdown thing. One was Archie. Archie, to me, is a unique entity. It's one that I think primarily operates outside the direct market, and inside the direct market is kind of almost playing by different rules.
How so?
It's one of those things, they're able to go on lower prices and at levels that look like, if you just look at the direct market side, don't really look all that viable, all that strong. But mm-hmm. in some cases, like on their digests and stuff, are such a tenth of the sales.
Mm-hmm.
It's very atypical. It just in terms of where the lion's share of their sales are, and most of it's outside the direct market.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, to me, the decisions they're making on what to continue, what to do and stuff is based on data outside of the diamond data primarily, I would think. So, you know, it's one of those things that it's just operating under a different paradigm for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So I put that to one category. And then that other category I created is publishers that are primarily manga publishers. Delray Manga, Random House, Tokyo Pop, Viz, Yen Press. You know, because while a lot of the manga is being done in trade format and shows up on the trade list, it sells more along the lines of periodical comics. You don't see the level of reorder, you know,
yeah,
that kind of stuff.
I was just going to ask you, it's not on the list this month, but where would you put like a Tomorrow's? On the, you know, they're all periodicals and
Tomorrow's actually I wouldn't put on this list.
You wouldn't, okay.
Because they're primarily magazines.
Right.
I'm looking more at sequential art books, you know, okay. Be it comics or trades.
Okay.
Likewise, I wouldn't put the Wizard on here.
Right.
I wouldn't put the guys who are doing the lead statues with the magazine comic type stuff, you know.
Okay.
At some point, I may add in magazines and stuff like that into the number crunching. Mm-hmm. I've got the data for a lot of it.
There's not that many magazines left.
I know.
I mean, with Foundry is gone, and then you know, right now, out of Tomorrow's and Rough Stuff.
Oh, Rough Stuff too?
Stuff's done.
Hadn't
number
heard
12.
That.
Done.
And the anime one from Wizard.
Yeah.
So, yeah, tough time for magazines.
What was the one, I think we've talked about it before, just getting off track. What's the one comic that focuses on the Golden Age? Is it Comics or something like that?
That is a good question. I'm not sure.
Okay, I forgot. Okay.
I really tend not to get that many magazines. I've been getting,
Yeah.
Actually, I've started cutting quite a few of the Tomorrow stuff with the budget constraints I've got.
Yeah.
But I was enjoying Right Now and stuff like that. It just seems like a rough time for magazines.
Yep.
But, you know, I've got some of that data, and if just for tracking Wizard, if nothing else, I think it might be interesting to add in at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But they've condensed that list from the top 15 to the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
So that right there says something about how the magazine sector's doing. But again, you know, I added this section where I'm doing kind of a composite ranking for the dollar total for the top 300 comics and the top 300 trades, just to where I can see, you know, what's a percentage, you know, which publisher's getting most from the trades or most from the comics or all from one or the other, and kind of, you know, what percentage of the overall totals are these guys doing.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting. You know, something, again, I'll play with. That's really about it so far as the overall breakdown. Nothing too terribly surprising. We had 139 reorder items this month. Again, considering the warehouse move, I think that was great. Number one item, gee, no surprise, Watchmen trade paperback.
Mm-hmm.
It's been on the list 49 times before and has no doubt been worthy of being on a top 300 list probably a couple hundred more times. It did 12,466 estimated units in February. Now that brings the total reported estimated sales through Diamond to 177,591 units. Again, keep in mind, prior to a couple of months ago, we only had the top 100 trades. Going even further back, they only reported the top 50, prior to that the top 25, prior to that the top 10. Throughout all of this time, Watchmen has been available for reorder. So, this is, you know, a drop in the bucket compared to what Diamond has probably sold, and a drop in the bucket as to what this thing has sold just overall. Now, stepping away from the Diamond data for a moment, but staying on this Watchmen trade paperback, at one point in the last few weeks, I think it was after the movie came out, Watchmen, the trade paperback, had a ranking of it was the number one item on Amazon. Not the number one trade, not the number one comic, the number one book. Which, you know, I don't know how long it stayed there. As we record this right now, it is the number one in books for comic strips, superheroes, DC Comics, and it is number 17 in books.
Mm-hmm.
And that's competing again with books of all types. I'm really looking forward to seeing the book scan data when it gets leaked at the end of the year. No doubt it's going to be, you know, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of copies out there.
Mm-hmm.
DC is doing another consignment program or whatever for Watchmen.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's part of why they're able to keep doing these numbers. The way the system works is retailers can say, I want X number of copies, and all they got to do is hang on to them until X date, which I forget when the next cutoff point is, maybe September or something. Again, I'm not sure exactly when. At which point, they'll have a one-month window to return any unsold copies.
Mm-hmm.
Any they sell, they sell, they pay for, you know, the normal percentage, whatever. But it's basically zero risk for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they may have to pay to ship stuff back, I'm not real clear on that. But it's not like retailers are having to front the money gambling that they might be able to sell these copies. DC is taking the risk for them. And I really commend DC on doing that. You know, that's something that perhaps more publishers should, you know, consider shouldering some of the risk on some of these items.
Mm-hmm.
That was also the only item on the Diamond side that sold over 10,000. Hell, over 7,000. Because the number two item, which was the Batman RIP Deluxe Edition hardcover, sold 6,792 units. Which, you know, pretty good, pretty good. Most months that would have still been, you know, up in the top couple of items. Few months it would have placed number one. Most months, eh, maybe not. Number three on the list is Scott Pilgrim Volume 5 graphic novel. 6,126 units. And this is up about 18.5% from the total known sales of Volume 4. We've also got a few other volumes of Scott Pilgrim on the list this month. And I think the movie coming out and all the press about that has certainly got people interested in the property.
Right.
Then from there, we drop below 5,500 with rank number 4 having All-Star Superman Volume 2 hardcover, having done only 5,453 units. That's actually down about 18.25% from the total known sales of the first hardcover. But again, that first hardcover's had more time. Give this one time. I'm fairly confident it'll make up quite a bit of that gap. Rounding out the top five, we've got volume 6 of DMZ, the trade paperback. That did 5,274 units. And this is one where historically, the reorder activity on DMZ would fall below the top 100. Now that we've got the top 300 this month, I believe we also have volumes 1 and 2 further down on the list. But I'm willing to bet that the other couple of volumes are also doing some nominal reorder on a routine basis. So the totals I have for the DMZ volumes, I'm only reporting what's Diamond has reported and, you know, stuff that falls below that. I can't report because I don't have. At the end of the year, I can guesstimate what they are. And again, historically, 2/3 of the sales have gone unreported for DMZ.
Right.
Jumping down just a little bit to rank number 8, we've got that first volume of the Hulk trade paperback, Red Hulk. That did 4,175 units. And I tell you, this property is much stronger than I would have expected, both on the monthly side and really, you know, here on the trade side. I would have figured with the sales it was doing on the monthly that maybe it wouldn't do so well on, you know, on the trade and stuff. But I mean, what I've read of it, and I've been reading up through issue, I think, 9, I've enjoyed, I've just found it to be kind of light reading.
Mm-hmm.
But it's clicking with people, so they're doing something right.
Do you like this better than World War Hulk?
That's a tough question, because really it's such a different beast. World War Hulk is kind of Hulk as Conan. And that's kind of cool. You know, it's kind of fun.
Well, Planet Hulk was.
Or Planet Hulk was. World War Hulk, you're right. That one fell flat.
That one did fall flat. Okay.
I enjoyed when I read it, but didn't really have any lasting repercussions, and was a poor name for the event.
Okay.
Because it didn't really impact that much of the world. You know, trashed New York, although it recovered, you know, incredibly quickly from that. You know, and the Red Hulk stuff, I like what they're doing. I find it interesting, but it just seems to take too damn long to tell the story, and I'm still not sure who the Red Hulk is. I don't think they've revealed it yet.
Okay.
Add to that, they bumped it to a $3.99 cover price on the monthly side.
Right.
It fell victim to budget cuts for me. Now, when I get a job and get a paycheck and stuff, I'm going to go pick those up, no doubt. But it's one that, because it's doing so well, I think that's why they felt they could increase the price on that. Rounding out the top 10, we've got the Captain America Volume 3 trade paperback, The Death of Captain America, which sold 3,049 units. And that's down about 41.84% from the total known sales of Volume 2, which I find surprising and something that over time will probably get corrected.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, we drop below 3,000 units. And again, we've only covered 10 items. One of the myths that is out there is that everything gets collected to trade and has an infinite shelf life. Well, one, not everything gets collected to trade. Marvel and DC, almost certainly. The minor league publishers, usually. When you start getting to the farm teams, that's when it starts to get questionable. And then even if the property makes it to a trade or hardcover or other collected edition, we're already at the point, having gone through only the top 10 items, and yeah, we skipped a couple, where not every store is even ordering a copy. And nor should they if they don't think they can sell it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, by the time we hit rank 22, we've dropped below 2,500 units. By the time we hit rank 36, we've dropped below 2,000 units. And this month, and again, this is because of the warehouse move and all that stuff behind the scenes at Diamond, the list bottoms out at around 251 units. And this is kind of the lowest I've ever seen any of the lists go.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, I'm happy with this, because seeing items that are selling just a couple hundred units, really interesting. Because again, it tells you things that are slow and steady sellers. And to me,
right,
that's what wins the race. Now, when we went through the breakdown, you know, I mentioned that DC had 33.79% of the units compared to Marvel's 25.46%. Now, I remind you of that because what I want to point out now is we're already getting the wave of Secret Invasion trades.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the Secret Invasion Thunderbolt trade, the Secret Invasion Runaway Young Avengers trade, the Secret Invasion Frontline trade, Secret Invasion Black Panther, the Captain Britain and MI-13 Volume 1 Secret Invasion trade, the Secret Invasion Incredible Hercules trade, the Avengers Initiative Volume 3 Secret Invasion, and X-Factor Secret Invasion, Punisher War Journal Volume 5 Secret Invasion, New Avengers Volume 8 Secret Invasion Volume 1, which may or may not be reorder activity, because we had a similar title last time.
Uh-huh.
Secret Invasion itself, and I was thinking there was another one hiding down here. No, I think that's it, though.
Okay.
But, I mean, we've hit that first half of the wave, because there may be a few more coming out next month, or, you know, in...
For March, yeah.
As we record this, last month in March, next month in the numbers. It's
right.
So confusing. But when we had this with Civil War, that's when Marvel dominated the trade list. Didn't happen this time.
Right.
So I've got to start wondering if this strategy of major event stuff is starting to weaken for Marvel. You know, is that to say the next event would do even worse or this perform in this manner? No. They come with a new event, and it's just a brilliant concept executed really well, or a pile of crap that's done poorly but really clicks with the audience nonetheless,
mm-hmm,
could shoot through the roof.
Well, Marvel right now is kind of splitting, doing the Dark Reign and War of Kings.
The War of Kings, to me, is a follow-on the...
Annihilation
stuff.
Yeah.
Different characters, different group of titles, whatever. But it's that kind of a mini event
Yeah.
Whereas the Dark Reign stuff has the half a dozen, you know, mini series, all that kind of stuff.
I'll tell you a title that went by really quick. It was the Exinfernus. I mean, that thing came and went, didn't it? In, you know, already they just solicited the hardcover for it. And I don't even remember even seeing one Infernus book on the shelf.
I got the first two, I think.
Did you?
And then had to cut that due to budget cuts.
Yeah.
The third one came out in February, and I don't recall if the fourth one came out or not.
Okay.
I think it may have. But to me, that was just a really bad name for a title.
Yeah.
It's like, what were they? X, okay, put it to where it sorts with everything else. I kind of get that. Don't agree with it, but okay.
They should have just called it Inferno 2 or something like that.
I guess. I don't know.
Well,
they wanted the X there to sort.
No, but like X and, you know, Inferno 2 or whatever. Yeah, Infernus is just a really weird name.
Yeah, that's the part. I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They should have asked us nonetheless. We could have told them, choose something else.
Exactly.
Right. You guys pick what else. Just something else. But, you know, it's one of those things that I'm not saying we've hit, you know, event fatigue or anything of the sort, because really I think it matters on the strength of individual events. We're at the point, though, where both Marvel and DC have been milking this particular sales technique long enough that, you know, they're draining some of the power from it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it was an event a year or every other year or whatever, and it actually felt like something. And we call these events because they were big, memorable events.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're just another storyline. Mm-hmm. Big storyline. They're epic, but they're not really events anymore. And that's unfortunate.
Yeah. Because when it comes, it's almost like crying wolf, because when Marvel is going to have the next big event, everybody's going to say, really? That's what you said the last time. And that's what you said the last time before that and before that.
Yeah.
They're going to have to say, no. This is really going to be like Civil War.
They're going to say, this time we mean it. And they're going to say, like, the last time you said that or the time before
yeah.
that?
Yeah. Oh, it's, you know, it's not going to be Secret Invasion. Oh, it's going to be more like the, on this, okay, you know, well, see it when I believe it kind of thing.
Well, and it's one of those things that what worked last year, what worked 5 years ago, what worked 10 years ago, may not work next year, may not work this year.
Right.
The audience is changing, expectations are changing. And continuing to do the same old thing or go back to the glory days, I don't know if that's a good idea. I'm not saying it's a bad idea in and of itself, but... Oh, and I just noticed I missed mentioning the Nova Volume 3 Secret Invasion trade paperback.
Nova, yeah.
It's like, okay, we got yet another one.
Real quick, did Secret Invasion follow Civil War, or was there something in between?
They had the Initiative...
The Initiative.
Banner, but yeah. It was not an event. It didn't have its own miniseries.
But that was that was the in-between. Okay.
That was kind of the breather period.
That was the breather. Okay. And now Dark Reign is like the breather period between Secret Invasion and whatever else is next.
No.
No?
They're actually doing, I think, a Dark Reign miniseries. Plus, they've got six or seven. One for Hawkeye, one for Elektra, one for the Fantastic Four.
Oh, so Dark Reign is an event, more or less.
Yes.
Okay.
And again, kind of back-to-back events, even if they didn't start the Dark Reign miniseries at that point. And I'm pretty sure they're doing one. I could be wrong.
Okay.
I've actually kind of, you know, stopped looking as closely at the Marvel previews as I otherwise would have because of budget constraints.
Right.
Try not to get too tempted. One other thing that I think is kind of worth talking about, although it's not really necessarily an item on the list. You know, we've talked in the past about how some of the gemstone titles have balanced between the comic and trade list and kind of which side of the fence do they sit on. Well, it turns out that conundrum may take on a totally different, you know, form. And currently the conundrum seems to be, is gemstone going to continue doing some of these things? Is gemstone going to continue to exist?
Mm-hmm.
And initially reports were that it was pretty much over, fini, and done, and that the Overstreet price guide that just came out was going to be the last thing.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, reports are, and this is from J.C. Vaughn, who works at Gemstone, there are plans to do another Overstreet price guide next year, and the EC line of collected editions, I think, they're trying to figure out what their plans are going to be. I think they've decided not to continue on the Disney line of properties. But basically, Gemstone is not over. It is not done, as best I can tell.
Don't they have to say that, though? You know, I mean, it's you know, it's almost like they have to say something. You know, oh, we're not done. You know, we're planning on doing the next Overstreet price guide. It's almost like a coach who is on the hot seat, you know, and, you know, are you fired yet? You worried? No, my job is secure kind of thing. I'm not going to get fired. You know, they have to say something positive.
If it was just Steve Geppi doing that announcement of, no, it's not over. Yeah, we laid people off, whatever. I'd give what you're saying a bit more credence.
Right.
I know J.C. Vaughn, and I'm willing to take it at face value if he says they've got plans to do another Overstreet, that at the moment they've got plans to do another Overstreet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that could change the minute he sent that email out. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I know him well enough that, well, it's, of course, it's possible that any of this is just spin for the sake of spin and face saving. I'm hoping that's not the case.
Right.
At the very least, he's still got a job or had a job long enough to send out that note. So that says something.
Mm-hmm.
But we're hearing about belt tightening at Diamond. We're hearing about it now, obviously, at Gemstone. I haven't been keeping up with what's going on with Alliance to know if there's any stuff going there or not.
Or Devil's Due, for that matter, like we mentioned before.
Devil's Due, though, is not part of the Diamond kind of conglomerate of companies.
No, but I mean, as far as companies in flux,
yeah.
Though, you know, I mean, the whole Devil's Due thing was, that's been talked about for 2 years now, you know.
Well, Devil's Due at this point, I think, has again lost its minor league standing in my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And all the signs I'm seeing points to it probably being over by the end of the year.
Yeah.
At least as far as a major ongoing concern. Now, does that mean the company's going to stop and cease to exist? No.
I like how Seeley came out and said that he'll always do Hack Slash. He's like, I'm always going to do it no matter what. Well, you didn't say you're always going to do it at Devil's Due. You know, you just said you're always going to do it.
Well, when the big announcement for their hot new property was that they were going to continue the Jericho canceled TV series as a comic.
Please.
I'm like, really? That's your big news?
Oh my God.
I mean, maybe it'll do great for them.
Maybe, yeah.
I don't see it being the next Buffy or Angel or Serenity kind of property for them. But, you know, we've had a previews where Devil's Due had no presence.
Mm-hmm.
We've had one or two where they had a 2 or 3 page presence with Hack Slash and one or two other items. And if they can pull out of this and, you know, get back on their feet, that'd be great. I'd love to see that.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
However, my gut feeling is that's not likely to happen. We're going to see them kind of, you know, flounder in terms of erratic, you know, releases and stuff like that at best.
Mm-hmm.
And the company may exist, but really, are they coming out with stuff or not? There are a number of other publishers like that, you know, were doing pretty well at one point and then got to a whatever happened to them. I remember they used to exist kind of stage.
Right.
I hate to see that happen. You know, I'd like to see more publishers out there that were stronger. And really, I'd like to see more of them kind of get out of that farm team, up to that minor league, work their way from there, get a third one at least up to that major league standing. But that takes time and hard work to do.
You know, getting back to the EC line, John, I think, you know, this is just speculation on my part, but I think EC had a lot to do, or the Gemstone had a lot to do with reprinting the archive. EC archive had a lot to do with Dark Horse getting in the game with Creepy and Eerie, and also Marvel getting into their Atlas horror line with Strange Tales and Journey into Mystery and and those sort of books, where I think back in 2006, nobody else was reprinting the horror comics from the 1950s. And I think, like I said, EC had a lot to do with revitalizing that. It's too bad they're having troubles with it now, because we have seen it sold fairly well. But I don't know if the production costs are too high for something like that or what, but hopefully somebody will, if Gemstone or EC or whoever is not going to be publishing the EC archive, somebody should really pick it up and finish it.
Well, really, I think everything Gemstone has been doing is, by and large, something that somebody else should pick up.
Mm-hmm.
Be it the EC stuff, certainly if Overstreet winds up homeless, somebody's going to pick that up.
Yeah.
The value of the brand is pretty high. I don't know who would be a good new publisher for that. Krause seems like a choice, but they've already got two or three price guides of their own. You know what I mean?
Right.
But certainly all the classic, Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck stuff, I would like to see go somewhere.
Oh, somebody will pick that up, yeah.
Not necessarily, because...
I'd hope so, you know.
Look at how many companies over the years have tried to do it and, really have had some hard time doing it.
Can Disney bring that in-house? I mean, they're such a major company.
They did at one point.
Yeah, they did, right, yeah.
Right now, my understanding is the Disney stuff has stopped. Gemstone has not renewed the license.
Yeah. Don't forget, and also the Disney Adventure books got canceled a couple months ago, too.
Mm-hmm.
What
that means, though, is right now, the only comic publisher in the U.S. that has an active Disney license is Boom Studios with the Pixar stuff.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
Now, maybe Boom will decide to look into the Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck stuff. I've heard somebody online suggest Archie should look into that.
Well, wait a minute. Who owns the... Someone just brought up the Incredibles and the Muppets.
That's Boom.
Oh, is that Boom? Okay, you're right. Okay.
And they've apparently got a newsstand distribution deal lined up and stuff like that. I wish them nothing but success there.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they can create a feeder system for comics, in other words, get kids hooked on properties they're familiar with, train them in reading comics, get them, hooked into the format and the hobby, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I can't think of a better person to kind of spearhead and oversee that kind of a push than Mark Waid.
Mm-hmm.
He is a comic fan in the best of all ways that term can be defined. And if he thinks he's got a way to bring kids back into comics, I hope the entire industry gives him as much support as they can. But, it's always been kind of funny for Diamond to have a related company of Gemstone. And I'm not totally sure if it's a child company, sibling company, or just both owned by Steve Geppi or what. But obviously there are some business links to be had there. It's funny for the distributor of new comics to have a comic publishing company as part of their corporate umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
They're essentially competing with the people they're distributing. And that's always seemed a little odd. Now, granted, we've got Haven. In the past, we had Cold Cut and FM. So there were other distributors out there. But it just seems a little puzzling as to how some of that doesn't hit antitrust stuff or whatever.
Right, right.
But, hey, not my problem,
Well, my daughter loves to read. I just picked her up the SpongeBob little digest, and she's loving that. And that's by Tokyo Pop.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's the thing. You got to get them young and get them interested. I mean, Patrick, he loves the Marvel Adventures digest. He doesn't really like the comic book so much because I think it just rips easy. And, kids are. They just rip anything, and they'll throw it around. And where the digest size, you pack – 6 or 7 comics in there, and it's a perfect size for their hands, and it's great. And, it's funny because I had these old Avengers comics from 1983 or whatever it was, and 85 or, and just, I said, hey, you want to try these on for size. And he looked at them. He could care less. You know, it just looks so old and the art looks so different. Whereas the new Marvel Adventure stuff, it's crisp, it's clean, it's digital. You know, it's Iron Man from the movie kind of thing. You know, and he's much more into that than the old comics.
Have you tried some of the DC Digests from the early 80s?
No, not from the early 80s, no.
You know the ones I'm talking about, though.
Yeah.
The Blue Ribbon Digest, the Best of DC, Adventure Comics.
Yeah.
Because I was hooked on those as, you know, at that point. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where I got a lot of the reprints of the early Legion stuff and, you know, got hooked on a lot of the Silver Age stuff they were reprinting at that point. And, you know, hey, if there is a physical packaging that is more conducive to sales than others, go with it. Mm-hmm. You know, why publishers, you know, DC, Marvel, or others aren't trying to, you know, study the traditional manga format, the dimensions, the size ratio, everything, mm-hmm. and leverage that. I don't know. I mean, I think there's lessons to be learned there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we could talk about that all night. My God, we have a symposium on that.
Yeah. One other thing I wanted to mention. There are two items on here I kind of wanted to run by you, kind of see what your thoughts are. If you go to rank 148, we've got Hank Ketcham's Complete Dennis the Menace from 1959 to 1960. This is volume 5 of the hardcovers. Did 553 units. And then if we go further down to rank 293, we've got the Complete Peanuts Volume 11 with 253 units. So these are low enough that we may not see them depending, you know, where the list cuts off and stuff again. You know, it seems to me that these kind of, I'm going to say more upscale, you know, hardcover collections of classic comic strips are fairly niche items.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I think that Fantagraphics, though, is committed to the Peanuts, you know, reprinting everything, all 25 years or 25 volumes or whatever it's going to be. But, yeah, that seems awfully low. And that volume 11, that was touted as the, you know, the Charlie Brown era that we all grew up on, you know, with the put it this way, this volume 11 is kind of the same time when they started doing the TV shows.
Ah.
So it's right, you know, that the late 1960s, early 1970s, Charlie Brown Christmas, Great Pumpkin, that sort of thing is right smack here. And that's where, you know, Peanuts 2 really took off, you know. They grew out of the 1950s and 60s Peanuts, and it really grew into what we know and love on TV and the movies and the TV specials and everything. This is that era. It's like the new era of Peanuts right here.
Right, right. Well, I'm glad to hear they're committed to this because certainly with sales at this point, you know, I could see where maybe it is or isn't worth their time. But it's good to see this kind of classic material, you know, getting nice collections.
Yeah. I have the first volume. I haven't really picked up anything after this, though. And I don't have the Dennis the Menace stuff. But that book, though, is literally a square book. It's not the rectangle-looking book that you'd find in, like, the Peanuts volume. This is Dennis the Menace is a square, literally a square book.
Interesting, interesting.
Yeah,
yeah, I guess the size ratio you're going to do those books in is really dependent on the material.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how many you want to put to a page and stuff like that.
I don't even know how many years Dennis the Menace went. Can they collect all the way up to like 85, you know? Or I wonder how far they're going with that one.
I don't know. I'm not even sure how long Ketchum had done it.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be Ketchum's stuff or if they're going to continue it when he stopped doing it.
Well, again, the title is Hank Ketchum's Complete Dennis the Menace, so...
Yeah, but, you know, DC also did Will Eisner's The Spirit Archives, and they collected everything that was not Will Eisner.
True. That makes sense.
That might be just be his name and title only, and they're going to collect everything. And that'll be interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see who they're committed to, you know, because another, you know, if you look at these old classic strips, John, you know, you've got IDW doing Terry and the Pirates and Dick Tracy and the old Annie stuff, and Fantagraphics also is doing the old Popeye stuff, and there's always Gasoline Alley and that kind of strips, and Checker picked up Beetle Bailey, and it also BC they picked up. And so, yeah, I don't know who's buying these books, but.
How much of this do you think is due to the people making the decisions at these publishers just being fans of the material?
Oh, I think that's quite a bit. You know, I think looking at the new Rip Kirby coming out, forget who is doing that, but that clearly is stuff that, you know, hey, we might as well do this. IDW is doing it. You know, just we're fans of this and it should be collected. And eventually you're going to see everything collected. You know, you're going to probably see more, you know, Modesty Blaze has been collected for years. You're probably going to see, like, you know, Mary Worth and Judge Parker and Gil Thorpe and all these strips that haven't been collected, you know, these soap opera strips kind of thing.
Well, I hope these things are getting into the bookstores. And they're making an effort to let, you know, non-comic book readers be aware of them.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a generation of people that, you know, grew up reading these things in the newspaper and would like to have a nice collection of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that demographic and the demographic, you know, going into comic stores that's going through previews and would know to pre-order these things, I think those are different groups.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think, and I don't want to sound, you know, ageist or anything of the sort, but I mean, to me, the Hank Ketchum's Dennis the Menace is something I think would appeal more to my father than to me.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But does your father want to make that investment for $30 a book and collect 10 books?
My particular father? Yeah, probably not, or, but there's the outside chance.
That's the thing. That's when you're getting back to it's a niche audience. Yeah, it's a commitment for sure.
But it's a niche audience that potentially could be hit as well by putting one of the flyers in with your gasoline bill every month. You know how they have the little, you know, hey, get this kind of bizarre gadget or whatever.
Right.
If this was a, you know, get one of these shipped every, you know, 6 months or what have you kind of collections. What I'm saying is I don't know that the people who might be the most interested in these products are getting reached.
Do you think that these books Dennis the Menace is doing this. They're going to softcover format. Do you think that these books are better suited for the softcover market?
I don't think it's really a hardcover softcover thing. Now, okay. I'll admit, saying that, I'd be more tempted to get them in soft cover just because they'd be cheaper.
Yeah, yeah.
But I really think what I picture, and perhaps completely wrongfully so, what I picture is the key demographic for this is people a little bit older than I am who are more in the newspaper generation and mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say hardcover format, but something where you reach those people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to say people who are in that 50 to 75 age range. And would they be willing to pay, you know, like the $25 for this complete Dennis the Menace or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
Hardcover? Yeah, quite possibly. I don't think the price would scare them off.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the, what do you mean I've got to pre-order it through a comic store? Where the hell is a comic store? I don't want to go to a comic store. You know what I mean? It's a different demographic for newspaper collection or comic strip collections than comic book collections.
You know, it's funny. How would they even know it existed?
That's my point.
Yeah.
My dad at one point was telling me something about Hank Ketchum's Dennis the Menace. I forget exactly what the context was, but it's the kind of thing that makes me think, you know, I'm not sure if it was just he liked Dennis the Menace or he knew something about Hank Ketchum's other work or what, again, the context was. But it's the kind of thing that if my dad maybe saw this at a Borders or Barnes & Noble or something, there's a chance he might say, hey, you know, I love this thing. I want to get this. Maybe he wouldn't, you know, whatever.
Right.
There is zero chance he would ever walk into a comic book store. The comic book store would have it, he would see it, and he would buy it.
Mm-hmm.
I think, to me, this is a generational thing of the people who read the newspaper every day and, you know, look at the newspaper sales and that, you know, whole industry and how it's kind of tanking at the moment. Our generation, by and large, are not newspaper readers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't have, therefore, the attachment to Dennis the Menace, to Peanuts, to BC, to Beetle Bailey. You know, or if we do, it's, yeah, I remember reading the Sunday comics when I was a kid because my parents got the paper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think there are better ways to market these books.
Well, that's why we've had this discussion before. When the DVDs come out, whether it be a Batman movie or a Peanuts collection DVD of shorts from, you know, the 1970s, you know, I'm surprised that there's not a little flyer in there that says, hey, if you like this, go to Fantagraphics to buy this collection. Have a nice picture of all the books laid out. Or when they do a TV special every year, Christmas or Halloween, you know, do a 10-second ad, literally, with a guy doing a voiceover with a shoot of the books on the table saying, hey, go to your favorite bookstore and, you know, get the Peanuts collection from 1958 all the way through 1980 or 1995 or whatever it is. You know, it's just, I don't know why they don't, why doesn't Fantagraphics invest that money? And they would sell a ton of books.
Well, or go another route and find a way to get it hooked into the pledge drives or whatever PBS does.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
For $50, you get this level of membership and we'll give you this complete, you know, Dennis the Menace thing or whatever.
Right.
Because again, that to me is more likely the demographic that has the nostalgia, emotional attachment to this material.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, I don't know how these things are selling in the bookstores or other venues, but these really strike me, particularly when I see only a couple hundred units, as something that I really think would not be hard to match or exceed these sales elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, you find the people who grew up on Dennis the Menace, who either watched the old TV show, read the comic strip, whatever, and just loved the character.
Well, the movies are still coming out on DVD, you know?
Yeah. So
just tie it in all together, you know?
It's a matter of knowing the audience and finding it and reaching them.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else? Or are we pretty much done?
No, I think that was good talk, yeah.
I think so, too. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If you differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the monthly question. The Diamond Order Index only goes two decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust and needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or as few as 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer's here, then it probably isn't meant for you.
This support is void in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Athlon, the English language itself, you work very differently there.